kisses, your kiss, Medusa's touch. Turn into a pillar of salt. To die now would be perfection. Then my loneliness closes in, so I drink a German wine and drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. And drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. Grab my mind, drunken thoughts of wounds and men. Why does the devil leave for us this legacy of loneliness, this cry for you, and a dagger's thrust with your hair?
Good evening, everyone, and hello. You're listening to Revision Media at revisionmedia.org. Today is Thursday, January 2nd, 2020. And this is the Roundtable Unlimited. Coming to you this and every Thursday with unlimited moderators, topics, and please, if you want to join us, folks, that is what the roundtable is all about. We've only had a few regulars lately, but I would always welcome new folks to the roundtable. And I'm sure some of you out there only catch the archives and aren't able. You might consider 1 week, you know, trying to check it out live. You know, make adjustments if possible and call in, you know, contribute the same way as you've been listening to others contributing in past weeks. But unlimited participants and topics, so do feel free to join us here, folks. It's an open forum discussion and we want your voice to be heard. You know, I mean, I and the other hosts here can always use their show as a platform to voice their opinions. But this is, as I say, intended for the listenership in general. And this is the first show of 2020, as far as the roundtables. So, you know, you might have some reflections on the past year. Perhaps are looking toward the future with certain points you'd like to voice, or perhaps you'd like to mention your concerns or predictions regarding the upcoming year or decade. We had a pretty good year-end New Year's Eve countdown on Mr. Jared Daniels' show this week as well. It was a bit of a round table in and of itself. I almost wondered if people around the station would still have enough momentum, that being considered. But I figured I'd start up the round table. Of course, didn't want to delay with the new year. I thought it would be good setting a precedent to be sure to have a full schedule this week. I know a lot of people love to take off for the holiday, Christmas and New Year's weeks in particular. But do call in, folks, if you would like. That number, 855-492-6049. That number again, 855-492-6049. Bring a topic to the floor, comment on something you've heard brought up in the past or something currently in discussion. And when I look at just the direction we seem to be headed, I can't help but think of censorship as the biggest concern for the upcoming decade. We could in the past take freedom of speech, our First Amendment, for granted. In past decades, it was never an issue. You could always go to court if anything violated those rights. Now, we're having exceptions here and there, and we're getting self-censorship and the shunning of society to enforce, influence rather, that self-censorship. But this so-called hate speech is primarily the way it is justified in most cases. We have this idea that something can be hate speech and therefore have no value, no right to even be stated, no right to even be heard. Because that's seen as, or construed as, hateful by a particular individual or group in their definition or assessment. And so often this is abused toward ulterior motives, people who actually aren't even bothered by the statement in question. But of course, as we've heard many comment, any statement can have someone out there take offense to it, take offense to it in one way or another. It's really related to interpretation and perception, which of course is unique to the individual. But, there's a suggestion at times of people's personal safety being endangered by statements, so-called hate speech, as a justification to remove said speech or punish said individual. A lot of other times, it's simply that the person was emotionally damaged, injured, traumatized. It made them feel bad. It hurt their feelings. But where do you draw any sort of lines if you start down that slippery slope? I really don't see how any of these instances are justification. And, free society, in the sense, why all these people are flocking to the United States, short of all benefits, opportunities, exaggerated though these claims may be, they're being sold this migration on. It still is also because of the high trust society, the sort of society that really allows dialogue and discourse as a means of bettering ourselves. Be able to seriously look at all factors, all conditions, including all conditions of the citizens and how they're treated, how their lives wind up being in these municipalities, and how their rulers choose to legislate and maintain them. So it's really in our best interests, if we want to have valid feedback and treat people well, to not censor people. And it's a slippery slope. from a society that treats its citizens well when removing freedom of speech here and there. And of course, it's just easier to do it the next time around, with each exception made. And it's that slippery slope that soon enough finds you left in conditions which are not at all resembling the place you once called home, the place you once cherished for these very principles. I was covering a lot on my show recently about, well, what's been going on at the university level regarding a large amount of censorship, but also social engineering. I mean, the gender conditioning, and then, of course, the whole anti-white agenda. And, let's see, last week I was covering a lot of good articles out of campus reform. I was actually going to revisit some of that probably next week, in a future show, at least, of mine, because I didn't even get to some of them, and it just really, really seems like it's getting more and more out of control every year with these policies, with the double standard, and with these attitudes, for that matter. But we have an economy that many claim has been improving, doing well under Trump, according to the corporate media. Of course, there are many sources in the independent media contrary to this. But really, questioning the official narrative on that, even anything, is starting to be seen as, well, be labeled taboo. Of course, you're trying to find out the right information. So many people see right through all of these corporate media platforms. And now with this Trump impeachment, it's really doing a lot of harm to perception of government. Pardon me. Perception of government as well. I mean, people always suspected, to a good extent, there were quite a few corrupt individuals throughout government offices in general, but not to this extent. And I think it's pretty clear now, as far as the whole fake news term, that it's really being, well, I mean, we have newspeak, just like in an Orwellian novel, all around us. And you're seen as a conspiracy theorist, you know, someone who's on the fringe and not credible. If you look into or question any of the official stances, I mean, we have, as I said, this gender conditioning, very prominent on campuses, but of course all over TV land, Hollywood, films, everything in the media. It is so excessively against any traditional or modest sense of sexuality in the public place. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, we had in the past so many restrictions on children viewing films because of sexual content, and now with this gender conditioning and transgender acceptance, gay promotion and the like, it seems so much of that is just disintegrating. And no one's really explaining or acknowledging, much less giving any justification for why this should occur. So it is very curious, the whole gender war, gender warfare, gender conditioning. And of course, I mentioned the anti-white agenda. But yeah, questioning anything, the economy, the pharmaceutical industry, this climate change propaganda, a great deal of science, of course, is driven politically and has been that way for far too long. I was just reading a quote from Nikola Tesla. I mean, that was yesterday. I'm pointing out that, far too many are thinking deeply, yet still quite insane. And the scientific community is certainly described by him in ways that surprised me. To see so far back, how far back the systematic corruption and special interest lobbying, basically, that even the scientific community has been held under, I suppose is a good way to put it. So you have everything basically taboo to look into for yourself, to try to reserve judgment on, basically. I mean, that pretty much is the message for the future, for the 21st century, is you are not supposed to research. This is something that is done by qualified appointed individuals who have already been delineated. There's really no opinion other than the official narrative given that you are supposed to toe. And don't think of looking to other sources, as I say, trying to do any comparison studies or research on your own. And well, then of course, when you look at politics, when you look at the war agenda, censorship is obviously there as much as it ever has been. Now they're pressuring more and more legislation to stop the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Boycotting Israeli products because of, well, I mean, most primarily their treatment of the Palestinians, and there's such a hypocrisy when they're always screaming about being in danger, persecuted, all of this by Middle Eastern neighbors they claim are going to try to wipe them off the face of the earth any minute. It was supposed to happen yesterday. I don't know. Of course, striking out against these neighbors while crying in pain themselves. So that's, of course, still at the top of the list in censorship. Don't criticize Israel. The head of the Jewish monolith. You best support our greatest ally and the only democracy in the Middle East, as it's always referred to. But I'm just throwing some some topics out there, folks, some issues. As we look into the next decade, I would like someone to jump in here. You know, as I say, this is a roundtable. This isn't Richard's monologue hour. And so, I mean, actually, other people could even interact in future in moderator role. We just would really need to get enough frequent participants for us to see how something like that could work. So I would like to see this with, you know, a larger amount of participants in the average roundtable. I think it could be good to have like even 5 to up to even like 10 at times. But I know people don't always stick around the whole time. Some jump in late, but definitely, we have plenty of listeners, I know. Everyone loves, as I say, listening to archives for that matter. We have to get more people into the live experience and therefore who might also contribute a bit more. You know, I'm not as likely to keep this going, certainly not for a full 2 hours on average, if we don't have a roundtable out of it. So, you know, folks, this is here for the taking, but the getting's good now. You know, so get while that getting's good and call that number. And it's a toll-free number, by the way. 855-492-6049. Toll-free, so let us know what you think. 855-492-6049. I was mentioning, I think, something that is relevant, not to focus too much on the black pill side of things, but an important concern. Perhaps we don't even all remember or realize just how much for this coming decade could be Fukushima fallout. It's the after effects, the effects in general, and the chain reactions, which are only just beginning. When you think of the long-term symbiotic qualities so much life on the planet shares with one another. I had mentioned Greta, Little Miss Greta Asperger's, and she, well, if she were sincere, she would be discussing something like that, you know, something like Fukushima. I mean, that is a little more justifiable, at least. You could say, how dare you, to corporations and just the elite banking industry and the like, with concerns of results fallout from, well, lack of proper, I mean, a lot of things could be put in place regarding safety measures, which actually weren't in a lot of the constructions of these reactors, for that matter, and in general, just it's a whole theory, you know, on perpetual nuclear reactor-based power. It just seems like you're setting yourself up from everything we've learned about these approaches and with other forms out there, forms of power that they don't even really want to get out to the public because, well, first off, they're still trying to make as much money as they can off fossil fuels. Many are skeptical about even the origin of those. I really couldn't say I have enough data this way or that. But nonetheless, many sources of fuel can and do go repressed, are suppressed, because too many alternatives would disrupt the money flow into the pockets of the assigned few. And really, it's about demand. And so you do kind of need to be sure you don't have any options which will could be easier to maintain. I mean, we always hear about free energy technology. I mean, just the whole idea, though, that there are a lot of fuels which are never even considered. I've heard of cannabis seeds, for example, able to be made into a fuel more efficient than gasoline. And of course, without the same sort of byproduct effects on the environment. But it's just one of many I've actually heard of as far as gasoline alternatives alone, petrol alternatives, as some call it. But yes, Fukushima, I would say, is very much a concern. And people are, I think most humans are just trying to hope it goes away. You know, just don't think about it anymore. Okay, Fukushima happened. We're hearing about results in the Pacific. We're hearing about more and more, overflow of these attempted containment units the Japanese had in place for a time. And I remember some of the robots they sent down there just completely fried before even getting close to trying to mitigate the damages at the current time they were attempting said missions. But it really is something that we would really need to refocus a lot of our scientific community, our resources, and our priorities. I mean, we have a focus on war, which could very logically be redirected into trying to deal with this Fukushima fallout and consequences. It would make a lot more sense. I mean, people talk about, the governments know about extraterrestrials or life on other planets. They don't want to tell us any of that because it would supposedly unite humanity, right? Just to find out there's something out there worth getting in contact with or looking forward to tomorrow, next week, next century. And, well, just maybe a sense for some supposedly of more spirituality, reason to live morally because you see there's other life somewhere. I don't know what you hear a lot of speculation on that. I think that this should have been good enough. I mean, Fukushima, if that couldn't unite the planet, being like, okay, we have to deal with this, to put things aside, what is? You know, I mean, if, for that matter, they've been aware since the 70s, Mars missions, that there was microscopic life. I mean, they have confirmation since then. They haven't really been sharing, you know. Some people who've been affiliated with the NASA community have confirmed such, but now in more recent times we're hearing more updates finally on that. But it's always very iffy. There is, it seems, by some people a genuine concern not to spend that, you know, not to use that up until people can, well, our elites of the world can be sure to cash in on it properly enough, or whatever they would plan, if they ever do plan to officially market to everyone the idea that there's life elsewhere, or even confirmation of intelligent life elsewhere. I mean, assuming we acknowledge that we have that here, first off, of course. But if anyone could, well, bring this to light in a more demanding way, you know, just the sort of consequences to the biosphere situation, such as Fukushima has unleashed. I mean, really, I've seen a lot of amazing discoveries revealed in my lifetime alone. I am confident that we could at least mitigate a lot of the issues surrounding, oil disasters. They're finding a lot of amazing techniques for dealing with that. I had one gentleman on in the past, few times interviewed him, actually, Ken Rolla, and he claims that it's no big deal, that the technology exists to remove radiation, unstable nuclear qualities from an environment, objects, organic beings, whatever. And it's just evidently not that well known, and certainly nothing that anyone in power actually wants to get out to become more widely known or available. I don't know. I've always had trouble just fully believing that, just because it just sounds incredible. By that I just mean it sounds amazing. I mean, it sounds like it would be wonderful if it is indeed true. So there is most likely potential with research into science and technology to deal with some of the nuclear, the radioactive after effects. But of course, a lot has already occurred. A lot of damage has already been done. I mean, a lot of species have already taken major hits due to what has occurred. And as I say, it can take a long time, because we don't even understand all of the symbiotic relationships of life on this planet. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about bee populations and about how about how many ways we've detected they contribute to the environments which they contribute, which they habitate, rather, and just the amount of other species, conditions, and the like, which will irreversibly deteriorate or just completely lose symbiotic stasis as far as being an environment for said life forms. But there's a lot of positive and negative you could look at, as far as 2020, the 2020s, the roaring 20s, once again, right? If anything, it was really a bit of a break from traditionalism in a certain sense, culturally, that we associated with the 1920s as the so-called roaring 20s. This would be seen in many ways as an attack on traditional Western values of the time. But now, if anything, we're seeing an opposite, where it's starting to revert. We're seeing a popularization of a traditionalism return. You know, I wouldn't say regression, I'd say rebirth of really the positive cultural aspects of this traditionalism mindset, traditionalist mindset. And a lot of course, people are becoming polarized over the whole thing. But we definitely have seen this affect the youngest generation the most. I mean, we're hearing a strong inclination toward more traditional conservative sort of values and lifestyle appreciation from this so-called Zoomer age group, which is just barely you know, about to get out of school age in a short time to come. And well, it will probably lead toward a bit more, I mean, it's hard to say really how this will all play out, but right now we definitely have multiple societies within our society struggling for really selling their way as correct. I mean, modernism has given way to anti-traditionalism, the hyper-feminism, the gender conditioning, and just gone so far off the reservation, to use a politically incorrect term, that, you know, people can see how, at this point, it's disregarding anything in science and nature which could actually aid you in a good life. And at that point, people are saying, whoa, you know, I mean, I appreciated, you know, some things, you know, trying to be fair, what the gender issue, I mean, people have had a racial consciousness, of course, that has been shaming whites more and more for the last, what, 60, 70 years, I'd say. And, of course, the feminist movement. I mean, originally, a lot of people saw it as a positive thing. It's mostly just trying to acknowledge the exceptions to the rule and, you know, allow for opportunity based on ability and inclination, you know, mindset for those who would be interested in such types of occupations or roles, appointments, and the like. But now there's, of course, this pressure. I mean, you're expected to, well, not only be everything, be the successful woman, if you are still a mother and, you know, trying to raise a family at the same time or not. And then this sort of competitiveness on top of it, we're getting in the culture now and all the, well, television and film depictions really influencing this message to compete and be odds with males, you know, female and male characters. And of course, very much a reversal of the traditional roles depicted in all of these. I mean, the average female growing up now really must feel like their whole life is a bit of a politically correct test, you know, that they are expected to excel at. And I mean, there are so many messages which are keeping people at odds with each other and even with nature itself at times to serve these agendas, which really are really only working toward the benefit of the few who have already been benefiting all along. It's just one more way to tweak the system each time around with a lot of these trends, as it were. But we are getting trad trend. Yeah, I guess you could say that. Already building steam and momentum as we reach the 20s here. Can I say 20s? It sounds, you know, it sounds kind of weird, you know? Just sounds like something that's already occurred. But no, we're there again, you know, the 20s. Of course, I have a problem referring to the most recent decade. I mean, the teens, I don't know. It's kind of a hard way to, like the 2010s, I've heard people say. It's very awkward, you know, the first two decades there. But yeah, we can refer to the 20s now. You know, come on, man. We're living in the 20s. You know, get out of the past, boomer. Right? No, I actually hate that that excessive attack on boomers, even though I'm not one myself. I'm a Generation X, which are starting to get some slack as well, but not nearly as much, and certainly not deserving as much. Nonetheless, I mean, we have just the whole catchphrase of okay, boomer. You know, it's like everyone loves this now. I don't know, here we go. The young people really seem to enjoy hating on the boomers. I don't know, what is this all about? Maybe someone can call in and get me up to speed here. What is it with all these, what is it, mostly the millennials? I don't think so. You know, I think this is mostly the Zoomers. You know, those who are still of school age, who seem to be popularizing the whole okay boomer phrase. But who knows, it could be people at the tail end of millennials, mostly people in their 20s who are into the whole okay boomer thing. I'm not really sure
this call is
what
being
all
recorded.
It's trying to refer to. Have to really dissect. I mean, what separates them? Well, it looks like we have someone who joined us on the line. Excellent. We could actually make this a round table, possibly. Looks like we have Johnny Sabalos. Johnny in Texas. Hello, Johnny.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Richard.
Hey.
Oh, man, isn't it a crazy, crazy year?
Yeah.
It's going to be a crazy one.
Yeah. I was just talking about the okay boomer phrase.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's hilarious. The boomers, the zoomers, everything.
Well, what age group do you think has been popularizing that the most? Do you think it's people in their 20s or people in their teens still with the okay boomer thing?
Well, I guess when I was growing up, we used to call it boomer baby boom era or something like that during the World War II era. So I think they're just taking the boomer part. And it's funny because the zoomers are calling them the boomers and the boomers are calling those, the younger folks, the zoomers. So,
well, you know, it's like,
it's kind of like,
well, the phrase is kind of like when you say, okay, whatever, you know, I mean, it's implying that you're not even going to debate because you're acknowledging the person's out of touch, or just been drinking too much of the Kool-Aid from the propaganda of the era they grew up in. That's the best way I could assess the whole okay boomer. But no, yeah, it was people coming home after World War II and having a family, you know, that post-war procreation boom, you know, birthing boom of, you know, soldiers who were glad they survived. And of course, if they didn't have someone waiting for them, hooking up with someone when they get back in the States, and for having that family, since they managed to survive and, you know, appreciate, you know, the good life of the 50s there, where suddenly the average working man, was getting decent wages, almost treated as well as the people of Germany were, back in the 30s for that matter. But we had the 50s, as a kind of a unique era where, I mean, it was just for a temporary thing, that the working man was able to thrive so well economically, and where one breadwinner could support a house and an entire family easily on that one salary. I noticed there's been an interesting statistic that, home prices haven't really, if you look at inflation since the 50s to now, home prices have only really changed along with inflation. And yet people are only to make, if you account for inflation, people are only making on average about half what they were then. That's why you need two people working now. You know, the whole model they want now is both parents working full time, and you put the child in daycare and let the educational system raise them, of course, with all the politically correct ideals, which are even against you when they come home from school. But, you know, this is what the agenda has been, really. I mean, people get half as much pay as they were then, you know, to have the same life and sort of household and family lifestyle. And they, yeah, they're making sure everyone works. No one can raise the children. And really, no one can really take a breath up from their job enough to really notice, how much the country's been stolen from us by these corporations, and really just small town America is being decimated. They're trying to force everyone into these mega cities now. You know, I'm in one of them. I'm ashamed of that, but hey, I was born here. If that's an excuse, I was born in Chicago. What can I say? Huh? Get over it, right? There, I got my accent on. Okay.
There you go. No, it is a shame. Yeah, the 50s, the golden years, it was different. Obviously, a lot of stuff happened after World War II and all that happened, but it's a shame that these Zoomers are calling them boomers because they don't want to hear nothing. It's like, where's your respect for your elders? You know, I grew up with respect for the elders. And it's a sad thing to see that the young generation can't talk to the older generation and have dialogue, discord of sorts. And they're on two different levels. It's a shame. And sometimes I do believe that the older generation, well, I would say for the most part, 90% of the time, that the older generation is trying to enlighten the newer generation, but they don't want to hear it. They're stuck to their ways. They're self-entitled. They feel like they have a chip on their shoulder. The world owes them everything because the government says that they're oppressed or whatever it may be. And it's a sad time. But you brought up something earlier in today's show I would like to jump on top of, if I may, when it came to the corporate industries and space. I'm actually kind of excited about maybe the Space Force that's going to happen. They signed the bill, $750 billion. I think this is a long time coming, as I mentioned before. These oligarchs, these technocracies, these big globalists, whatever you want to call them, I think that they've been suppressing us to go into space. I think they already have some space vehicles, I guess you would say, that they're already over there. I believe this. There's a lot of research even that the Chinese were on Mars with a satellite in 1976. So I learned that probably 8 months ago when I was reading some history, some research, and I said, wow, how come I never learned that when I was in high school? China went to Mars with a satellite. They had an object land on Mars. But even then, now think about 1976 to 2020. We just hit the 2020 marker. So it's just interesting because I think that they have already have implemented some stuff. And as you said, they're trying to roll this out so they can cash in on this the most they can. So I know it's controversial that America is now going to have a space force going up through there. But I don't know. It's better than Russia or China, I believe. So it's a weird thing. But I think there's going to be a new horizon. 2020 is going to be a big one. 2030, this next decade is going to be a big one. People aren't going to know what to really do. And it's interesting you said the education.
I was going to just ask, are you better than Russia or China, though? I mean, that's always interesting. It always, had a lot of people on their toes. I mean, back when the first landers like Sputnik were successful and from the Soviet Union, that really had the U.S. Concerned with putting the pedal to the metal, you know. And yeah, sure enough, we had one-upped them soon enough. But no, what were you going to say about the education?
Yeah, it's interesting with the education with the Zoomers. I'm going to start using that more and more often now, just to kind of hammer it to them. But yeah, it's interesting because these Zoomers, they don't really know much. They're just smart enough to push buttons. They're smart enough to pass the test. They don't know how to fix anything. They don't know how to code.
Well, they're zooming.
They don't know how to use a screwdriver.
They're zooming. I like the term because they're zooming through their formative years with all this technology and all these screens and distractions in front of them. And the information age, I mean, those of us who are taking in the most important information throughout all decades, past and present, I mean, it's not all about high technology, how you access, and just the pace. It takes a lot of time to absorb all of this information, and it's not it's not in your clickbait sort of format with this Pavlovian reward system. I mean, we notice parts of the brain get activated with like a reward system, kind of a chemical release when people notice tweets that get noticed or responded to or a Facebook messages or likes or any information, any little technological update that they can go and mess with, just kind of like a mouse running over to its wheel to spin around in the cage. And, it's just fluff. It's just mindlessness to a large extent. We're told, look this way, look that way. Oh, look over here. Look what this person mentioned. Look what this person commented on. This person invited you to like, whatever, I mean, there's some ridiculous, but it's, most of it is, these people are zooming past all the information without absorbing it with technology now. And the expectation of all this technology around you 24/7 and the Internet of Things, all the smart technology, it's really all just for marketing data and the consumer's not benefiting. But what do you think? I like how it personifies it. I mean, the technology allows them to zoom past their formative years without really absorbing the information age.
Oh, yeah. Just think about history. These people don't know much about history. It's funny because you see all these people on Instagram or Twitter, they're Instagram models. It's like, what do you have to offer except you're an attractive woman or a handsome man or whatever? Well, they get paid big bucks just to take pictures and get clickbaits, and it's like, is this what we're boiling down to society?
Oh, I saw a tragic example. This one gentleman was pointing out in one of his podcasts, and this woman, it was ridiculous, the sort of content she was discussing, really vulgar and pathetic content related to her fans and everything, and she actually had posts where, accounts on social media set up for people to contribute monthly just so that they could view her posts. And I guess some of these people are actually successful at it. These airheads who know how to show enough skin and bedazzle these people with their pomp and ego, right?
Oh yeah, sorry, I put it on mute. I do apologize. Oh. No, it is true. Yeah, it is true. If you look at Patreon, for example, that's exactly what people do on Patreon, just to see their content. It's like, who is this person? Who cares about that person? Why would I pay that? But I guess you get behind the scene footage of them in a revealing bikini or something, or out on the beach, you know, with ladies and drinks, or however it may be, however they sell it. But
it's self-absorption. You know, it's self-absorption, yeah, it is. And this LGBTQ warfare, really, you know, this excessive gender conditioning that's really weaponized at this point. I think it's fair to say that is catering to people's potential for just indulging in their ego and complete self-absorption. You can see how that can work, right? Just your sexuality is the center of the universe, you know? Don't worry about anything else, you know? Or anyone.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly not a family, certainly not anyone who's being injured innocent civilians in wars or people starving or without jobs or getting displaced. Or don't worry about any of that. Just worry about your sexual organs and how you're treated, what restroom you can use, and just how you're referred to with pronouns in the workplace, because you're the center. You are it.
Oh yeah, that's all it is. It's self-stroking your ego. That's the thing about, I guess, these Zoomers. They don't like to be spoken down upon against the Boomers. And that's true, though. They don't have any respect. They're only they only care about themselves. They have a chip on their shoulder. But it's just interesting because I just think about all the things that happened until 2020. The history, the generations, XYZ, now the Zoomer generation, whatever they want to call them. Man, it used to be a lot different. Like, people had morals, respects. They actually had a talent, a trait. They could offer a service to their community. Now nobody in this age, the newer generation, has anything to offer except their ego and their two cents. It's just a scary thing. You know, sometimes even when I try to date some of these ladies, it's like, my goodness, you really don't have nothing going for you, lady. No offense, but, you know, it's just a sad thing because we're coming with all these generations coming together in the 20th century, and it's pretty divided, I think, but I just don't like where it's going as well. It's like, wow, if we're going to do all these innovative things like go to space or anything, it's like, we could get a monkey to do that how good the technology is.
Well, okay, you're looking right past all of these sort of trivialities. You're not finding anyone with substance. Of course, as much as you're trying to learn more, contribute to the good of the planet and the people, at the same time, you're thinking about a potential family if you found someone worthy and everything. And yeah, I see how it could be discouraging, where you could run into a lot of people who just don't really seem like you could possibly want to, you know, commit your life to being with them, where they just don't have anything going on. I mean, what could the ladies out there benefit from hearing from Johnny Sabalos here? I mean, how could they be more desirable? What do you think ladies aren't concerned about enough these days, and could be a bit more, at least in the Southwest over there?
I have four sisters, just to be up front. So I was raised with sisters.
All right.
My mother raised me, just so I'm not a misogynist in any way. But
excellent.
It's just one of those things. It's just one of those things. I believe it used to be different. A woman would want a man because he had talent and he was educated or he had some kind of value. Nowadays, there is no value even to most men. as long as they're a YouTube star, Instagram model, or something, you know, they're out taking pictures, which all these, I don't know what's going on with the women. Even they did some experiments, going out and interviewing women this whole year. They had like a breakdown of what do women even think about women being Instagram models. And women were saying it's really ridiculous. So it's, I don't even think it's men thinking this way. I think it's even women putting themselves on a stool, always challenging themselves. And I believe they're worth a lot more, but the way that they have been indoctrinated and raised into this new system, I don't believe is the right way. And this has been happening for 20, 30 years, the last three decades. So it's an interesting time because I'm in my 30s. So the internet was prevalent when I was young, and then it evolved into what it is now at my age. And it's
some people
a lot of leaps and bounds.
Some people are reporting more and more emphasis on just negative male characters in a lot of the films and television shows, where you'll have like a female character who's clearly, you know, the hero, you know, the protagonist, the good guy, if you will. Okay, good girl, I guess. Yeah. And you'll have a male character who's just all of the negative stereotypes, including those of keeping women down, being threatened by them, jealous of them, and having a false sense of superiority, and of course then the woman triumphing intellectually and physically as well in a lot of cases, even if clearly by the build of the people, it's just not believable at all that this person could be able to take out this other individual. But it seems like there's more and more an emphasis on that, both intellectually and physically, by women depicted on the screen, and the male characters just always the negative attributes, you know, in a very negative role, and of course therefore seen also in the wrong and as an enemy to the female.
Yeah, that's the sad part.
Have you seen this television and films a lot more lately, where it's becoming more prevalent, would you say?
Yes, especially I would say in the 90s as well. We had all the TV series, you know.
Well, no, I mean more recently. I'm saying, has it happened more? Are you seeing it out there more now than in the past?
I don't watch entertainment, so I couldn't really tell you. Okay. I don't listen to any of the music.
Yeah,
either,
I hear you, but
I really couldn't tell you.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you notice in passing sometimes on your places.
I do see a lot of virtual signaling, though. For example, we see a lot of these LGBT men and women, whatever they are, it doesn't just have to be women, gay people, whoever. They virtue signal a lot when it comes to, let's say, even the climate change. It's like, oh, the climate change is hysteria. It's like, well, what are you doing to fix it? What are you studying to fix it, to make it better? And then, of course, there's some people out there. I've seen some science experiments that have fungus eat plastic, for example.
Well, you know that the whole climate change thing is just complete inaccuracy in the way it's presented, right? I mean, it's not that CO2 is a big detrimental force, and it's, I mean, really the changes long term that we've had is due to the sun, different long-term cycles. We have two long-term cycles overlapping right now, which are making for a very cooling sort of time period for as far as the atmospheric results on Earth. And this could be for much of our lifetime, basically. It's a pretty long cycle. But, I mean, we have noticed occurrences already of data from past warming periods, recent past, being hidden. So they want to make it sound, because at the moment we haven't seen all the effects of the Maunder minimum, is the solar period we're entering with such a cooling phase we're going to be experiencing. But since at this moment, the immediate past few years, we have had some warming phase preceding. They're trying to make it seem like, oh, look, you know, this is hotter than ever, and it's going to keep going up, and hiding data from the past. I mean, I believe it was the 19-teens or
20s. 13,
was it 20s?
1913.
Yeah, well, 1913. There. Yeah, that sounds more like one of the pieces of data I heard, where they're actually trying to hide a lot of this information and a lot of key online resources, databases, skewed the data to try to make it seem like this is more of a spike in warming than we've had in the past, than that happens naturally cycling as it does. And of course, they're still trying to justify the carbon taxing, tying that into this. So there's a bit of that monetary motive as well. But people just totally not understanding the science of CO2 and oxygen, the symbiotic relationship plants and animals have with these gases, for example. And it's really staggering to me. But I mean, they're trying to shift it. Eventually, they're going to be trying to market on the cooling. Once it's obvious that climate change is cooling, they might even use the global cooling phrase. Who knows? Or they'll just maybe still call it climate change. But they'll say, well, look how cold it's getting due to this climate change. They won't talk about CO2 anymore, but they'll find some new way to tax you for some additional thing that they'll conjure, along the way. But I mean, really, it's about, as I say, losing nationhood sovereignty, a global sort of body openly able to legislate all laws and edicts, worldwide, rather, completely worldwide. And a justification like this, well, I mentioned Fukushima, and in some ways, it's valid that people should put aside differences to work on something that's actually, killing everyone's home for the future. But it's amazing that they don't focus. If they were serious, they'd be talking about Fukushima as well and what to do about that. They know that maybe they don't think there's something that can be done, or they just want to hide or keep secluded. I mentioned this gentleman talking about being able to remove radiation with devices that he claims have been in existence, that exist today. But I would say that you would hear at least someone talking about Fukushima more, or at least trying to develop technology to deal with it if there isn't. If these sort of people really cared about all of these things, the whole Greta Thunberg climate change thing is, it's so pushed in your face. And it's the only thing pushed in your face so much, it's just pretty obvious that there are ulterior motives, I would say.
Oh, yeah.
Her mother.
Agenda.
Did you hear what I think I was mentioning it yesterday? Her mother is so delusional, she believes that Greta can see the CO2 molecules, that she has this special sixth sense, and she can actually see the CO2 molecules in the air, and she can tell all different places she visits, and if she's happens to be passing by a landfill, she'll see huge amounts of CO2 above it in the atmosphere, and she can see the CO2 molecules. She's this
gifted person. Yeah,
gifted. I wanted to think Astrid of some cliched term from Hollywood. I'm not up on my old film knowledge anymore, but. The chosen one. And maybe that's a good phrase for
that's
her.
That's to me. I've never heard that one. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I didn't know her mother was so egotistical. But
I could bring that up here. I just had it because one of our hosts to the station, Willem Felderhoff, had posted it on Facebook. Yeah, up here we have. This is from the book, Greta's mother, Milena Ernman. She claims in her book, which is called Scenes from the Heart, Scenes from the Heart are life for the climate. And she claims that her child has somehow been gifted the supernatural ability to visualize CO2 levels everywhere she goes. Apparently, besides obsessive compulsive disorder and Asperger's syndrome, Greta was born with a sixth sense, ability to actually see carbon dioxide, CO2 molecules, floating around in the atmosphere. According to her mom, who should be in jail for child exploitation and abuse, Willem adds, Greta is able to see what other people cannot see. Milena explains in her book, quote, Greta can see carbon dioxide with the naked eye. She sees how it flows out of chimneys and changes the atmosphere in a landfill, unquote. So.
That's funny.
And that yeah. is what where I mentioned that one. I think there was another Tesla quote I came across recently I was confusing it with, where he talks about scientists in general. But this Nikola Tesla quote that Willem adds in here is really, I think, succinct to this whole, concise to this whole topic. Quote, the scientists of today, this one is about scientists. Quote, the scientists of today think deeply instead of clearly. One must be sane to think clearly, but one can think deeply and be quite insane, unquote, by Nikola Tesla. So, I mean, even in his era, I mean, he saw how much science was insane with people who are, you know, speculating rather than rationalizing due to hard facts and evidence. And I mean, I'm sure it was even then politically motivated, the sciences as they are now, and corporate driven, corporate profit driven.
Oh yeah, it's pseudoscience, Richard. It's always been pseudoscience. You know, it's just ridiculous. It's strange because the scientific community, I believe, is a threat to standard morals of humanity that are embedded in us, our sixth sense, I guess you would call it even. But it's interesting because we talked about this even with, I believe Tony had called in, talking about the sun revolving around the Earth and the flat Earth and all this. That's all pseudoscience since back in the day, a long time ago. And it still is. It's just more absurd now. These kids don't know anything about the Earth or the magnetic field or solar winds or the sun. They don't understand how that has effect. Now it's being played out as an agenda. It's virtual signaling. And they don't even know the basic science. I ask them simple questions. For example, I asked a lot of these people just a simple question. What is the biggest contributor to CO2? They always say cars. Cars is the biggest one. I say, no, it's not. It's volcanic activity from the Earth's mantle, carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide. So how are you going to prevent the Earth evolving and changing? Let alone, how do you think these islands and continents got built? It's like they don't even know the simplicity of it. But you explain that to a Zoomer, they say, okay, whatever, you older guy or whatever they want to call you. They just opt out of it because it's cool. It's trendy to virtue signal this ignorance. So it's a weird time, especially with the 2020s here. It's going to be an interesting decade till 2030. But we're speaking about a few things as well, Agenda 30. This is what they've been planning to do to the youth for a long time, to indoctrinate them into this bullcrap pseudoscience, and then make them just smart enough to push buttons. They don't know how to control anything. They don't know anything. They don't
More and more restrictions on how much electricity you could use per day, you know, how many gallons of water for drinking water, toilet flushing and showers you can use per day, all of it. I mean, micromanaging lives as the norm just to make sure culture becomes more and more docile. You know, it's just an easier population of sheeple to control that way.
Well, that's what we're up against. And I believe that's what the older generation, and I'm in the middle of this generation of this divisiveness. I see it. I've seen it for a while now, and it's been an interesting moment to live with the last 10, 15 years.
You're a millennial. You're Generation Y, They don't call it Generation Y anymore, but the millennial is the new term.
Yeah, it used
they're
to be
using.
Generation Y.
Well, it still is.
That's what
but
I grew up knowing.
People aren't. I don't think people liked that term when they started analyzing it. I guess it was more, it was more derogatory than most of the other ones. So, but
well, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen here in the next 10 years? I believe we're going to start going to space in the next 5 or so. What do you believe in the next 10 years will happen? Let's just say we do find that microbacteria that you were speaking about earlier. Would this be revolutionary? Would this be a new evolution of sorts of humanity? Would we get off our asses and go explore the spaces?
But then we already have
time,
found.
Who would?
Well, that's what I'm saying. We already have found
on
Mars. We've confirmed life. We've confirmed
water
in a lot of places in this solar system and speculated on it due to a lot of the spectrometry results. I mean, as far as far off worlds as well, moons and the like, different planets, they can get an idea of the chemical composition, you know, based on the response to a lot of the laser spectrum transmission and well, I mean, just the waves that they're able to retrieve.
Penetrate through the ground. Yeah, I've seen that. That's very high tech technology.
Right.
I've seen it. They use it on Earth to find buried cities.
I think spectrometry, I want to say, but I could be off.
Yeah, that may be more like it. But yes, I've seen those satellites. Those are crazy satellites. I've seen that. So they've been using those out in space before they've been using them here. But that's the thing, Richard. They've been controlling this education. They've been controlling this information for their own self-use and their own gratification to make a bigger buck later on when all this is about to happen in this next decade.
We already have the real ID being rolled out. And this is like UN level, you know, this is international. And I would say in the next 10 years, we may see a new world order cryptocurrency, you know, an official UN cryptocurrency that they're going to try to start pushing, suggesting that people use. That's one prediction I have.
Yeah, they're kind of doing that already in China. Facial recognition, credit scores of your
social credit score. Yes.
Social credit scores, yeah. Yeah, it's a scary thing. I'm not for that.
What's your social credit, Johnny? I don't know if your social credit's looking too good these days.
I know, right?
Been
a challenge
tanking,
the status quo too much.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those things. What can you do? I think they're already doing that. Really,
we can
Richard.
Take you to a re-education camp, okay? There are things that can be done for a young man in your situation.
Yes. Well, that's what they do. If you think about it, with Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, I believe that they're already taking that into account and taking those statistics. It's a shame. You see a lot of those people get booted off or kicked off or shadow banned. Thankfully, it's never happened to me.
Well, I don't see why you don't want to hook up with an ultra-left-wing Antifa girl or some sort of activist gay boy as your lover. I mean, I think you have a problem, okay? That's what I think.
It's so true, because that's how ironic it is. That's how they paint the picture. If you disagree with them, that's exactly how they paint the picture. And there is no arguing with that. There's nowhere to even start a conversation, really, when that's where they come at. Out the gate, they come out swinging like that, and you say, hey, I'm just sitting back watching what you say. I got a few facts, and they just call you a racist or a bigot or a xenophobe. They use all these loaded words that really mean nothing nowadays, the way they use them so much frequently. But, wow, what can you do? How can you? And then you go out here and try to make stations or educational videos or documentaries or whatever it may be to help enlighten these people. And they don't even want to be watching this. They're too entertained by the TVs, by the social media accounts, their likes, as you're mentioning, how many times they got their shares or who's following them. It's a self-ego thing, and that's the sad thing that we're coming to here. It used to be the self-ego back in the 50s would be, were you a self-sustaining family, a woman or a man? Did you have a talent, as I said? None of that matters no more. None of this, why does it matter when they could just click a button and talk to Alexa, and Alexa orders them Panda Express, and it's at their door in 20 minutes. You know, it's like, who cares about education? Who cares? As long as I get what I want and I'm saving money, or I benefit it, or I don't have to move a finger, it's a weird thing, because technology is good, but it could be used for evil as well. Unfortunately, I use technology, or unfortunately for the others, they don't use technology, but I prefer to use technology to self-interest or learn some of the stuff and understand more, but I don't see that happening no more.
Well, living off of Panda Express delivery, that's certainly a way of using technology for evil. I don't advocate that at all. You're going to destroy your health, Johnny.
Yeah, I know, right? Gluttony. That's funny, though, but, you know, I don't know, Richard. I think the next decade is going to be one hell of a paradigm shift. It's going to be something that we probably wouldn't even think about right now. I think it's going to be very vast, and it's going to come quick. And it's already here when it comes to how they're articulating this and molding it into their favor. So it's like, we're fighting the beast, and how do you fight the beast? The beast is already here. Scary time. I don't know. I'm not into the whole conspiracy. And I understand the Agenda 30 agenda.
What do you mean?
I understand
what conspiracy? You say you're not into the whole conspiracy. Conspiracy of what?
Of the New World Order.
Well, so the classic William Cooper conspiracy theory, that's true, though. There is a new world order. There is a power elite, a global power elite. I mean, there is an agenda at hand. If you look at a lot of the documents that he included in his book, I mean, it's a lot of important. I mean, I think the protocols, for example, are still... worth reading all the way through, especially if it's been a long time or never that you've actually tried to actually read through the protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. There's another very interesting piece on how to manipulate economic systems in seeing how it translates directly to the theory of electricity and electrical components. It's very interesting, but I mean, it reminds you of the protocols in the manipulative language and motives that it consists of. And
well, yeah,
go ahead.
We see it all the time. No, we see it all the time. That's crazy that you bring that up. Even just think about speech and how people speak to each other. We recept on that, and we see this in politics all the time. We really do. They use these key loaded terms.
Well, the title of this document comparing economic systems to understand and control and manipulate them, basically how it relates to electrical theory, is Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. It's very notorious in its origin, as it was found in an IBM copier that was used, and someone had purchased, one of these big copy machines that has like an interior compartment with, could have huge documents, still in. And in this case, it had this document still inside. And it got spread, of course, more and more distributed, and now you can find tons of electronic copies online, as well as published in multiple books, at least in William Cooper's book. It was published in hard copy. I don't know how many others, but I'm sure many people copied that, that original that was found. Well, that original copy, source that was found. No, but Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. I could even send it to you. You know, I have a good PDF of it. And it's it's really worth.
I believe I went over it again, but okay. I'll go over it again. Yeah, I believe I've seen it before, and I know exactly what you're speaking of. Yes, that's what technology is. It's the silent weapon, and they're molding that and mending it to their needs. That's
well,
why
the quiet war,
about
and in that sense, was economic manipulation. But now we have this self censorship, and political correct, anti-hate speech sort of. Dominion that we're living within, you know, as another form of a quiet war. I'd say this social war, you know, what's socially acceptable or not.
Oh yeah. And these people, these young generation, I don't say these people in all, but the younger generation plays right into that. That's why I'm a little disappointed when I see the other women, I guess you'd say, fall into that so easily, you know. And it's a sad thing to see because it's just one of those things. I guess I have more conservative values than most, or maybe more towards the older generations, the boomers, but it's interesting because you see that with the technology, the trends, the AI, the algorithms, the news, all of this is being manipulated. They really don't know where to go with this, the younger generation. They're only being told what to believe. You and I question this as others, so we're the kooks. We're the conspiracy theorists now. There is no conspiracy theorist. You and I are the conspiracy theorists, Richard. The tables have turned.
Oh, well, we're carrying the torch, definitely. The people who have been kookified in the past by the corporate media have had us take on the torch, and of course we'll be demonized, condemned, criticized, and deemed illegitimate in just the same way, in much the same way. So I mean, our credibility, just for looking into a lot of these sort of topics, just for having associated with Dr. James Fetzer, all right, we're both nutters, Johnny. That's what they will have you believe.
Well, that's funny. I was actually going to bring some of that up, not James Fetzer in particular, but I was even going to say, Richard, you don't have a doctorate degree? If you don't have a doctorate degree, how can anybody take you serious? You don't have a pseudo-intellectual paper declaring that you are all-knowing? But even then, we do have some of these people that have doctorate degree and very educated, but if they speak on these topics as you and I, they're discredited. They're considered the conspiracy theory, even though they're highly educated people. And they went through the whole pseudo-intellectual shenanigans just to prove this. And then they get dismissed, they get sued, you know. It's like, what? And then the court system, my goodness, it's infiltrated. No other. It's total liberalism.
Well, but in a very,
there is no law.
In one very big way, of course, that people are conditioned to stay with the official narrative is all of these staged incidents that we've had in this era we've been living through. I mean, not just Dr. Fetzer, but a lot of people have been brilliant at calling out all of the inconsistencies and lies in the official story. And so many of these, Ole Damgaard is one gentleman I know, and he's absolutely brilliant. Over in Europe at dissecting incidents all over the world. You know, I mean, he even did back research on the JFK assassination and was welcomed recently this past year to speak at the conference. And evidently he had some information that they deemed worthy as far along onward as it is here, but of course a lot of these shooting incidents in the States and overseas as well that have been so politicized and hyped up, focused on by the media, you know, and it's pretty clear. I mean, whenever you get such excessive attention and all of the factors are exactly the stereotypes that they want to propagate, you know, especially if it's like a white lone gunman, You know, there's an agenda ready to go, a PC agenda that they're ready to roll out with speeches for what we should think of all of this, right?
Oh, yeah, 9/11 is a perfect example. They found out that it was the Middle East and Saudi Arabia within 1 hour, 2 hours.
It was Israel's enemies. It was done by Israel's enemes, of course.
I get that as well.
Yeah, that was what they wanted to drill home, basically. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But even that is an example. They already have the narrative rolled out. But it's funny because Neil deGrasse didn't say it. Bill Nye, the science guy, didn't say it. So it must be not true, Richard. If they didn't say it, it's not true. They even have these pseudo head figures out there.
Well, that makes me think of another area. That makes me think of another area where it's just disgusting how much is covered up and how much we're lied to is just the medical and pharmaceutical industrial complex. And, I mean, the cancer treatment centers for America, for example, they're all about profit, okay? There are many proven now confirmed cures for cancer, and all of them are being ignored by these people because the radiation and chemotherapy it just gives you a long-term patient.
How
it gives you a long-term patient with high medical bills, and they generally very often don't survive, and it's just ridiculous.
Oh,
I mean, how much that that sort of mentality and that example is a perfect example. The cancer treatment centers of America, it's shameless, right?
Oh yeah, it is ridiculous. Radio chemotherapy is the most stupidest thing I've ever heard.
And just prescription drugs, synthetic drugs in general. I mean, they've tried for decades and decades more and more to drill into your head that any sort of naturally occurring, herbal and otherwise plant medicines and everything are to be thought of as impotent, to not have any effectiveness. And they're synthetics, which are patentable. That profit of the patent of the synthetic, that's all they care about. Whereas, these are things that are not occurring in nature. These are molecules that didn't exist before. I mean, these are things the body can't recognize, doesn't know what to do with. And the side effects are tremendous. You hear it whispered or spoken quickly at the end of a lot of these commercials. And I mean, at least in Europe, it's illegal to have commercials for pharmaceuticals. Here in the U.S., you can even, it's like Vegas for pharmaceutical companies in the U.S., commercials for pharmaceuticals. Yeah. What do you know? I mean, supposedly the doctor at least went to school to understand how things react with other things. You are a lay person. What right do you have to go into the doctor and say, yeah, I heard about this drug on television. I want some of that, doc. Write me up. It's why can you put a commercial out for a pharmaceutical? I mean, how can you possibly justify that with a clear conscience? It just doesn't make any sense other than profit, and that's all it's about. So at least in that one issue, Europe is a little more looking out for the people than here. You can't have commercials for pharmaceuticals in Europe. People are generally getting free. Everyone gets health care, taken care of by the state. And in that, I do believe is the right way to go as opposed to here. So, I mean, at least there's that. But everything else is being pushed further toward a socialism descent toward communism, which is really not good. But as far as the medical industry looking out for abuses of pharmaceutical companies, yeah, there's a slight bit more conscience that's been clinged to in Europe, at least on that issue. But it's shameless.
Nobody oversights them.
How much they want health to be detrimental. Even just sweeteners, artificial flavorings, colors, everything. There are so many damaging things in just the processed foods we eat, and they don't put any effort into. I mean, the alternatives to sugar, most of them are more harmful than sugar. The good ones are generally suppressed, or people aren't aware of them. Stevia, that's the only good one I know of. All the others, you want to stay away from sucralose, aspartame,
aspartame.
Well, people pronounce it both ways, aspartame, aspartame. Yeah. And you know, the sucralose, it's just terrible. And it's just amazing, though, the whole suppression of health, the real cause of diabetes, the real cause of a lot of the obesity. I mean, and then, of course, the fast food chains add even more addictive and, fat-retaining qualities in a lot of cases with these additives. But in general, the whole medical industry, pharmaceutical industry, is about profit, and it's in the interest of keeping people sickly, honestly. It's that bad. And it's as disgusting as anything, you know, because the quality of life, and a lot of times the difference between life and death or a shorter lifespan for everyone. And that,
well, that's the thing.
No conscience.
That's the thing that you're bringing up compared to America and Europe. America is all for homeopathic remedies. I'm really against homeopathic medicines, all these synthetic medicines. That's when they really started studying this. This is where they started having laws against cannabis in particular, opiates. All these drugs used to be real. I have my grandfather's old snooter that used to be for sinuses. It had cocaine in it and all these things. And opiate, when you got sick, it was cough syrup. They had real, actual herbal ingredients. Now, as you said, it's all about the patent. It's all about the patent. How can we make
the synthetics?
Patent opiate? We have to make it a synthetic. That's what GMOs are. This is exactly the food industry, the USDA, and the homeopathic medicine industry go hand in hand. I truly believe that. They're working together on this. People need to be more educated, I believe. They don't know this, especially the Zoomers. Pills or painkillers. It's like, wow. You know, it's like OxyContin is probably more addictive than actual heroin if you take it in the right dosage. People have done this for centuries and decades. Now you see an epidemic in opiates because of pills. It's all synthesized, but it comes from one plant. It comes from the same plant, the poppy seed, the poppy plant. So I'm all against homeopathic medicine. The more synthetic it is, I believe, the more dangerous it is. It has a reverse reaction in the brain chemistry, which I'm all against. So, you know, but that's how they make money, and that's how the insurance companies do it. I remember my friend had cancer, and I told him, I said, why would you go on chemotherapy? He told me, John, I have to. I said, what do you mean? He says, my insurance company won't pay my family for me being off leave for being cancer-ridden. He had brain cancer. And I said, what? I said, you can't get no money from your insurance company unless you get chemotherapy? He said, yes. I can't provide for my family. He was a wealthy man, too. He has a great job. And he had a lot of bills to pay, and he has a big family. He's a good man. But he almost died from chemotherapy a few times. And thank God he is out of it, and he made it. He's out of remission and all this. But it was sick when he told me this story. I told him, I won't say his last name, but I said, Dale, why would you do that? That's not you. He said, I just have to. There's no other way around it. And if I don't, and let's just say I die, John, my insurance company won't give them the life insurance policy. So it's tied in politically with the laws, the legislation, the medical industry. Is
financially,
all working together.
Yeah. Wow, that's rough.
It's a sick thing.
That's horrible.
Thing. Yeah, and
I'm
that's
sorry.
What we're up against. But I think people need to be more educated on that, but... Yes, it's a crazy time on that, Richard, because it's going to be more synthesized. I don't know. Sometimes
so we may
I
see
that they're trying to do that.
So we'll probably see a bigger polarization, an increasing polarization, and you know, people who are getting back to natural alternatives to a lot of these. Certainly cancer treatments and. And just all the synthetics of the pharmaceutical industry, just avoiding of doctors and hospitals whenever you can. It's a practice, unfortunately, a lot of people tend to resort to. I mean, you could even get sick all too easily just being in them. That is something I can confirm again and again. And really, it's the second largest cause of death in the U.S. is from medical mistakes from someone or another in the hospital environment from the staff.
Well, how?
That's the second largest cause of death in the whole country of all ways you could die.
Wow.
So
how
it's pretty ridiculous. It is a shame where in some cases, I mean, you know, if let's say you have some sort of skin cancer or something or prostate cancer or something, even if you are going to treat it, say, with Rick Simpson oil, you know, cannabis oil treatment or some other alternative, which is what I'd recommend to. I'd say stay away from chemo, stay away from radiation therapy. But even if you did, well, yeah, want to use something like that, you want to know about it. The highest chance you'd have of success is to know about it as early as possible to be able to start treating it. And so you would, you know, want ideally to be able to still feel comfortable getting regular checkups for certain things like that, like for early like signs of cancer being there. But people are avoiding, you know, doctors and checkups and hospitals altogether in a lot of cases because of just the nature of all we've been discussing here, unfortunately, even for just that bare minimum, which could be beneficial.
Yeah, it's sickening because I do see this at the public education system. If we were to take vaccines into consideration, why is it mandatory that people need to take vaccines? And if vaccines work, let's just say the children that don't get vaccinated.
Oh, well, I've just saw another statistic where, I mean, an entire school,
let alone the nurses.
An entire school had been vaccinated, but they had to shut down the school.
Six measles breakout, I think
yeah,
it was, right?
Yeah. Because of this. And so it just shows how much they're ineffective at what they're targeted in preventing or immunizing.
Well, they're injecting the live virus.
To immunize.
They're injecting the live virus.
Right. But in other ways of predicting, I mean, yeah, that's one thing I would predict in the next decade, people would start polarizing more away from the official attitudes on vaccines, pharmaceuticals, you know, the medical synthetic industry. Well, the synthetic pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry, which, I mean, the hospitals work hand in hand with the pharmaceuticals, the psychiatry works hand in hand with the pharmaceutical companies and profits. Everyone around there is making sure to pad each other's pockets properly in the way all advice, recommendations, treatment, therapy, operations, everything is decided upon. That's
yeah.
The unfortunate reality. But I mean, you know, we see the whole... It's the so-called good old boy network. I mean, even with nuclear physics, they stick to a lot of things that are confirmed by many to be false by now, but because it's just what everyone's towing the line of. You know, you have to say that this list of people were correct because that's the club you're in. And if you want to ever be able to be in that club. And I mean, and so it's, you know, it's a problem across the sciences, not just the medical industry. But I think there will be more of a polarization away from big pharma in the next decade. I think nationalism, you know, we mentioned the information age getting to that tipping point. And I think with a lot of the awareness of just international players involved, you know, in all of this, all of this immigration, all of the anti-nationalist sentiment that's being generated, the perpetrators, without even having to name names, a lot of people, without me mentioning, will know what I'm referring to, and more people are finding out the truth about a lot of this. I mean, I just see this one meme going around more and more lately, a picture of Adolf Hitler, and it says, "In the end, you will know I was right." And, you know, with this globalism, this anti-nationalism, anti-racial consciousness and demonization of everything related to that is hate speech. Hate speech is what they want you to think of, you know, any acknowledgement of your extended family or of regional sovereignty and culture. That's what they're destroying, regional sovereignty and culture, if you don't have those bonds anymore. They're calling it hate speech, but really it's about global control, economically, with the social credit scores, just all-out control.
Oh yeah, they've been doing this for a long time.
But I'm trying to be optimistic here. See, I always end on a bitter note, it seems there, Johnny. But I was trying to be optimistic. I was saying that the information age is allowing us to reach a breaking point where a lot of people are seeing things for what it is. People are the meme trend phenomenon is powerful, and it does wake up a lot of people who don't otherwise have the time or interest to find out. But once you could actually turn someone on to some of these things from a meme, and then they actually get more involved in knowing about and wanting to prevent these situations, these conditions, that is inspiring. You know, that the whole meme war has even been effective. And those of us who are looking deeper and spreading more information, with writing books, writing articles, doing podcasts and radio shows such as this, I mean, you know, it has then translated with the meme artists to convey to more of the masses as well. I think we are gaining favor, you know. And I really don't think globalism will come about in this century because of the way the tide has started to push back already. Just in what I see since, say, 2014, 2015 till now, I see enough of a pushback, pro-nationalist pushback, and willing to examine all these things. You know, thus the name of my platform, Revision Media. And I really do think, in the long term, well, this is going to be a good decade, because it's a very important turning of the tide, as I say, point of the century, determining just how much globalist control will triumph. I don't think it will. I think that by the time the century is said and done, I think that the whole globalist effort will have failed miserably, will be like, you know, we'll have taken a couple steps forward and a couple dozen steps back, and nationalism will be reigning again for an indeterminable time into the future.
Yes, that's why I mentioned to you, as Richard, I said nationalism is their biggest threat. That's really
and
what
so
it is.
We are,
they don't want the people to stand up.
And so we are absorbing this information, you know, collecting it, learning it from those who have come before us, and retaining, passing on to those who shall come after.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
that's
we might not
thing.
See the success of everything is what I'm saying, you know, but we will be a crucial era in making sure that information is sustained and passed on to those who may see the success after we're gone. That's my point, you know?
Yes, sir. Yeah. That's why I have a big problem with tech globalists, the big tech companies. I think they're trying to control that information. Even the memes, like you're mentioning, they have such a powerful message. Just a little snapshot with some wording is just powerful. It opens people's eyes a little bit more. They say, oh, I heard something about that. Let me actually do a little research. Or I saw a show that correlated to that. Let me dig into that a little bit more. And so, yes, that is. But the big tech corporations, I believe, are the biggest threat with the medical industries. And who's checking them? Who's checking the medical industries? Who's checking big tech? Nobody's checking Google. You know, we've seen it, like, for the last 2 years in Congress. Even Congress couldn't even do nothing to Google. It's like they're too big to fail, quote unquote. You know, it's like, how can you tell them they can't have their own private company? And that's how they label it, as a private company. So that's even a law within itself. But where's the monopoly laws of the Rockefellers? How come we can't implement this? And sometimes I believe Congress is working hand in hand with big global tech. for their own benefits, to cover up their own crimes, their own bad deeds. So hopefully we get down to the bottom of that. But man, oh man, I think you're right, Richard. I'm very optimistic as well. I do believe that there is...
We lost you there, Johnny. I don't know if you're going to come back or what. I still don't hear you. I don't know if big tech got insulted with what you were saying and decided to shut you out or what. It looks like. Looks like we lost Johnny. I don't know. Maybe that was on my end, folks. But we lost the connection in the conference. But I think that was pretty much the best way for Johnny to sum things up, nonetheless. It really is an important era. And we might be disillusioned right now, but I think it should be some solace at the very least to think that if all the fruition of our labor does not materialize in our lifetime, at the very least it very well seems very likely, may very well come into full bloom in the generation to follow us, or yet quite after that. But I'd say in the next century, you know, within this, the end of this century, you know, let's say by the time you reach 2100, that we will have seen something that really has a triumph. Because of the information age, and it's harder to hold back these lies. I think it will probably be a bit of wax and wane, but I really am optimistic in that sense. So I would say within the next couple of generations, we will certainly see a full realization of that which we know is the best for our people. But that being said, I think we can still accomplish a good amount in our lifetime, and I think that we should really look at the big picture. This really is a determining era, you know, that we're just barely getting into here. And I see the pushback. People talk about 2012 and others laugh, you know, at the metaphysical suggestion of just a larger potential toward seeing things as they really are, understanding things on a deeper level, a conscious philosophical understanding. But there is a lot that I have seen start up and build momentum since that very time, 2012, honestly. I do see, though, a lot of push from a lot of the social engineering getting more extreme, having been getting more extreme this past decade, right along with that. But I am seeing, as I said, even since with the immigration and nationalist sort of social engineering war, anti-nationalist sort of globalization and weaponized immigration. Even with that, since 2014, 2015 to now, it really shows that the people are at a point where they're assessing, well, no, this is, a lot of this is not right, not going to be the best for anyone. And we're willing to take a stand, at least in being able to speak about it in some nations. In others, actually, where they have everyone behind them and taking steps to right the situation. And a lot of these other issues as well, the corporatism and the financial exploitation in time. As long as we do continue and preserve, retain, and educate in turn. But it is solace as well, sleeping a little easier with more understanding. You know, the confusion alone can be perhaps the most torturous part of a lot of this social engineering, a lot of the changes we experience. So doing what you can, you know, with good judgment, when and where, how those around you can be eased by your information, your knowledge as well. So enjoy 2020, folks, and please do tune back in. Thanks for listening to the Roundtable, and we hope to hear you contribute in future as well. And have a great night. Cheers.
You kiss Medusa's touch, turn into a pillar of salt. To die now would be perfection. Then my loneliness closes in, so I drink a German wine and drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. And drift in dreams of other lives and greater times. Grab my mind, drunken thoughts of wounds and men. Why does the devil leave for us this legacy of loneliness, this cry?